Radio.
This is Pet Life Radio. Let's talk pets.
Feline friends, welcome to Catitude. I'm your show host, Michelle Fern. Now, who among us cat lovers does not love a good cat book, right? And especially when there's a little mystery, I really love this book. I am so excited to have this New York Times bestselling author on our show, so stay tuned. We'll be right back.
Take a bite out of your competition. Advertise your business with an ad in Pet Life Radio podcasts and radio shows. There is no other pet-related media that is as large and reaches more pet parents and pet lovers than Pet Life Radio. With over 7 million monthly listeners, Pet Life Radio podcasts are available on all major podcast platforms. And our live radio stream goes out to over 250 million subscribers on iHeartRadio, Odyssey, TuneIn, and other streaming apps. For more information on how you can advertise on the number one pet podcast and radio network, visit PetLifeRadio.com/advertise today.
Let's Talk Pets on PetLifeRadio.com.
Welcome back, everyone. I'd like to welcome Gwen Cooper. As I mentioned, she's a New York Times bestselling author. And so Gwen, with her cats Clayton and Fanny, write these amazing books. So welcome, Gwen. I'm so happy to have you on Catitude.
Thank you so much for having me.
So obviously, Clayton and Fanny just assist. But can you give a little bit about your background and then tell us about your cats?
Yeah, sure. So I've been a writer for a while now. Some of your listeners are probably familiar with my memoir, Homer's Odyssey, A Fearless Feline Tale, or How I Learned About Love and Life with a Blind Wonder Cat. So that book came out a few years ago. I wrote a couple of follow-up books. I also wrote a novel called Love Saves the Day, which is narrated mostly from a cat's point of view. And so that's what I do. I also am very passionate about animal rescue, and I do a lot of work with animal rescue organizations in the U.S. and also around the world. Seems to be a lot more natural disasters these days. So there's sort of always somebody who needs a little bit more of a platform. Yeah, I feel like now I'm just rambling a little bit, but that's pretty much my deal. That's who I am. That's what I do.
Thanks for sharing that. Now, we're going to talk about your new book, which is You Only Live 9 Times.
Yes.
I love the title.
Thank you.
Before I ask you about the book, what inspired you as a writer to have cats as they're not always the center character, but they're sub-center? How would you say that?
Feline detectives. What inspired me to write a novel in which talking cats solve a murder, I think, is that.
That's a good way to put it.
Yes. And by the way, the cats talk to each other, not to the humans around them. This is not like a Dr. Dolittle thing. There's no supernatural cats or supernatural humans who can like mind meld with cats. The cats talk to each other. The humans talk to each other. The cats try to figure out ways to get the humans to know what they're doing. But getting back to your question, so again, those who have read Homer's Odyssey will be familiar with this story. But back when I had a couple of years after I had adopted Homer, who was a blind cat, I had just moved into my new apartment. It was my first apartment that I was living in by myself without my parents, without a roommate. And I woke up at 4 o'clock in the morning one day, and there was a strange man standing at the foot of my bed. I will not, you can read the entire story in Homer's Odyssey, but suffice it to say that Homer, who is a very small black cat, but who was really fearless, and he was an incredibly friendly cat, but he seemed to sense that this man was dangerous, and he attacked the man, who turned and ran out of my apartment, and we called the police, and in the end, everything was okay, thanks to Homer. So this idea of Homer as a crime-fighting cat has sort of always been in the back of my mind. And yeah, a couple of years ago, I thought it would be a really fun idea to write this cozy mystery series, and it's set in my native Miami Beach, born and raised in Miami Beach, and I spent a number of years living on South Beach in the 90s. So the book is set during that time. South Beach was very much like a small, I mean, it was, it still is a small town.
I don't know about now, because I'm based in South Florida. I don't know about now so much, but it was. And
so you know exactly what I'm talking about. Yes. I mean, South Beach, it's like 2 square miles. It's tiny. Yes. And back in the 90s, it was very much like you knew everyone and everyone knew you. And it was a very small town kind of vibe. And it just seemed like a fun idea, especially because I know this is what like everybody my age says about the time when they were in their 20s. But it just seems like the 90s was a much, you know, it was just things were a lot less, I don't know. Everyone seemed a lot friendlier back in the 90s. So, yeah. So it just seemed like a fun idea to set this novel circa 1998 in South Beach and to have cats solving a murder. It just all sort of came together.
Okay. Well, first of all, I'm glad Homer attacked that man. That is an incredible story.
He was truly an incredible cat. He really was.
Wow. Yes. I am going to read Homer's Odyssey because I have not that I can recall. I don't always remember the books I read and then I reread them, which is not a bad thing.
That happens to me all the time, by the way.
Not a bad thing. So I love the setting. I love how you have the cats talking to each other and also to the one dog. I think they do actually really speak to each other in their own way.
I would actually tend to agree with that. I really do. I feel that, I mean, obviously animals have ways of communicating with each other that are not going to be known to us because why would they be? They don't understand what we are saying to each other. So this is my theory as well.
Some people beg to differ. Everybody has different opinions, but I think they understand each other better than my cat might not understand me chooses not to understand me.
Well, that is the eternal question, of course, with cats. Do they not understand or do they choose not to understand? I've caught my cats understanding more than they would probably like me to know they do.
Yes, that's the key. Okay, let's get back to what inspired you to write You Only Live 9 Times?
You know, I had the idea very spontaneously a few years ago. I honestly don't remember what the initial impetus was. I had not yet at that time read really any cozy mysteries. I know that there is an entire subgenre of cozy mysteries with cats, and I had not at that point read any of those books. But it was a spontaneous idea that I had, and I just kind of, you know, Homer still has a very active social media community. And so I just kind of floated the idea there and people were very enthusiastic. And I was like, okay, you know what? I'm going to do this. And then for 2 years, I was so intimidated at the thought of doing it because I'm not a puzzle person. I've never written anything even close to a mystery. And I was pretty sure I could not do it. I was just really, really intimidated. And then one day last year, I told myself, look, it's been like 3 years since you first talked about this. So you're in or you're out. You're either going to do this or you got to tell everyone that you were just talking and you didn't really mean it. And I didn't like that idea. So I decided it was less scary to try to write the novel.
Well, I think you did a good job because I do read a lot of, we're recording this right before Halloween and that's coming up, but I'm not a fan of gore and horror and that kind of stuff. But
Neither am I, by the way.
Not my thing. But like going into some haunted place with people jumping out would be like,
not for me either.
But novels and, you know, mysteries and all that, fine with that. James Patterson is one of my favorite authors, but his early stuff. So I love when there's a twist also, but we'll get to that a little later. Why did you choose that title? What made you decide you only live 9 times?
It just so spontaneously occurred. I mean, again, as soon as I had the idea for writing a cozy mystery novel in which Homer and his two sisters would in some way solve a murder, at that same moment, I had the idea for the title. I can't even really tell you how it popped. It just popped into my head. It was not a thought process. It was not like I sat down. And I will tell you that for the second book in the series, which I am already at work on, which is called The Cat Wore Black, and I was looking at my shelf. You know, I've read some more mysteries since I decided to write this in the last few years. I have read more, and I've read not just cozy mysteries, but others, and I've really gotten to enjoy Cornell Woolrich. So I saw him kind of sitting on the shelf and the bride wore black. And I was like, ah, the cat, he is a black cat. The cat wore black. And, you know, so that's,
there you go.
That's how that happened. Yes.
Obviously, Patterson's not cozy mystery, but I like cozy mysteries too. So there's not many books I don't like.
I'm kind of right there with you on that, actually. As long as it's, you know, paper with words between covers, I'm in.
Right. Although there are sometimes books where I won't really jive with the voice.
Absolutely. Well, it's a very personal thing. I mean, ultimately, an author's voice, I think you need, you know, every art form, every mode of creative expression has its strengths and its weaknesses. I think one of the great strengths of writing and of books is that it's very intimate. It's a voice in your head. And if it's not a voice that you like having in your head, then you got to just get rid of it. You got to close the book and move on to the next one.
Yeah. Yeah. I try to force myself through, but at times it's like, okay, this is it.
Life is too short for bad books.
Yes. Yes. That would be a good t-shirt. So let's talk about different perspectives that you wanted to explore. So you have a character in the book that talks to the cats that's not a cat.
Well, there's a dog and there is a bird. I think in terms of actually being able to speak directly with the cats, I think that's it. The animals can all talk to each other. I do like to feel that Rachel, who's my human protagonist, and she is Homer and Scarlet and Vashti. Those are the other two cats who Homer lives with, Homer, Scarlet, and Vashti, and she is their human. So I do like to feel that there is kind of a really good unspoken communication between them. But ultimately, Rachel is not able to have conversations with the cats like the one that you and I are having right now.
Okay, and I get that. Are any of the situations in the book based on any of the occurrences that have happened between you and your cats? Like, I mean, do you have a dumbwaiter in your house or?
No.
Probably not. Most people don't, unless you have an older house.
Yeah, so I had to, you know, this was one of actually the challenges. And this was one thing that really, because then there were also practical considerations in writing this book. I'm writing these three cats who people know, but I'm writing them with a human who is in some ways based on me, but is ultimately not me. And people who know my cats know that they've always been strictly indoor cats. But if the cats are going to investigate murders without their human knowing about it, there has to be a way for them to get out of their home without her knowing. And it really, that took me a little while to come up with the mechanism by which the cats are ultimately able to sneak out of the house without Rachel knowing. That was not as immediate as the title or the idea for the book. That was actually something that took some thought over a period of time, you know, something that would be just believable. It doesn't have to really be completely believable, just plausible enough that people are like, okay, I could see it. It could happen.
And there's some other antics that are, could that really happen? And you think about it and go, yeah, it probably could. I'm not going to give away all the details, but the oil, I don't want to get into it, but the situation with the oil. And I hope this doesn't say so much, but I actually did wash Dennis because he's part Maine Coon. So he's like a dog, part dog cat. And I only say that because he's pretty chill. But that's not easy.
I will say, so there's a scene where one of the cats gets stuck in their mode of escape. And so they deploy Wesson oil to help ease her out. But I will say that and there are always people who are murder mystery aficionados will tell you what some of the rules of the genre are. One rule that I set for myself in it, and it was a very strict no cheating rule, that anything I had the cats do had to be something that cats could actually do, that they did not suddenly, you know, I didn't want them to like be able to read a name or, I mean, to do something that would genuinely be beyond the skills or physical abilities of a cat. So everything the cats do in the book is something that a cat could do in real life. And maybe you will start to wonder why your cats are doing some of the inexplicable, seemingly inexplicable things that they're doing when you see the thought process that the cats in the book have.
Yeah, it does get you thinking. All right, we're going to take a short break. We'll be right back.
Real people, Real stories.
Our little dog developed this lymph problem. But the chemotherapy lasted for 6 months, started developing more lymph nodes. So I thought I'd just try carnivore. The lymph nodes started to go down. Then I took him into the vet to have him checked out, and there was no signs at all inside.
My cat had issues that developed in his eye, and 3 months later, my veterinarian said, let's go ahead and remove the eye. I heard the carnivore on advertising. So I said, you know what? I'm going to order this product. They did the procedure. They did all the tests, and they said, I don't know what you did. This product saved his eye.
I've got a Labrador. He could hardly lift herself up off the floor. The treatment was chemotherapy. That's when I said, this could be the ticket. About 3 weeks, you could tell she was very alert. She was going on 5 mile walk. She is just like prime again.
Call 866-836-8735. That's 866-836-8735. Or visit carnivore.com. That's CARNIVORA.com.
Use promo code PETLIFE at checkout for 15% off your order at carnivora.com.
Let's talk pets.
Let's talk pets.
On Pet Life Radio.
Pet Life Radio.
PetLifeRadio.com.
Welcome back, everyone. We're talking to Gwen Cooper, who is a New York Times bestselling author, and we're talking about her book, You Only Live 9 Times. So, do you have a favorite character in your book?
I will tell you, so there is one character in the book who is there to be disliked. He's like, if you've ever like seen in kids like a puppet, you know, a Punch and Judy puppet show, he's the one who's there for you to say, boo, boo, you know, every time. You love to hate him. He's there for you to love to hate him. And he might be, and it's very obvious when you read the book, who he is. He's like a villain, but he's a comical villain. So, you know, he's a schlemiel, basically. And I have to say, I really do love him. I love this character. I started off loving to hate him, and now he just cracks me up. I think he's a big, I really wanted the book to be fun, and I think he is actually a big part of what makes the book fun. He develops this intense rivalry with the snootiest of the three cats at the center of the story. And he obviously is coming at this from this rivalry from a very human perspective, and she's coming at it from a very feline perspective. I think anybody listening to this knows what a snooty cat who really does not like a specific person, how intense that can be. And I actually think it's one of the most fun parts of the books that I did not originally conceptualize when I sat down to write the book. But this character sort of kept intruding himself, and I finally let him in, and I am very glad that I did so.
You know, that brings me to this question. I've read quite a few books on that authors have written on how they write, and I've heard over and over again, because it's on my bucket list to write a book. I don't know if it'll happen, but hopefully. But I've heard that sometimes you have the characters, you have everything, the scenario, your protagonist, everything. And then the book kind of writes itself. Things change.
I would say for me, there are some writers who, and every writer has a philosophy on this, I think. You know, Stephen King is very anti-outlined. He is very much of the school. You sit down and you start following the characters around, basically, and they reveal themselves to you. And then I know there are writers who are very intense about outlines. I would not have had the nerve to sit down to start. You know, I'm kind of in the middle with this book. I would not have had the nerve to sit down and start writing a murder mystery without knowing who the killer was going to be. Generally, and some of this did change, you know, in some of the details, but in the broadest strokes, I always knew who the killer was. I always knew what the clues leading to that person. I always knew what the red herrings were going to be. But having said that, a lot of who the characters were, a lot of the stuff in the town, you know, the great thing about a cozy mystery is that it's not just about the murder. It's about a town. It's about the people in the town. It's the characters who inhabit it. If you've done your job as a cozy mystery writer, people should be like, you know, despite the murders, I would really love to live in this town and hang out with these people. And so my cast of characters, you know, especially the supporting characters, that was much more of an organic kind of a process where, as I was writing, people, you know, some of the characters surprised me in some ways, and I went with it. And I think the book is better for it.
It's a great book. Really, really did really great book. In writing and living with cats, what is the one thing that you wish people understood more about cats? So it could be you know, people that have cats, that not all of us that have cats know everything about cats, or it could be just, you know, we have listeners that don't have cats that want to have cats or just like listening. So thank you for listening. But what would you like people to know?
So I would never presume to speak to other cat people, because I am definitely one of those people who I feel like, you know, the only thing I really know about cats is that I know nothing about cats, sort of.
That could be it.
Really, I have people who write to me all the time and they have very intense questions. And I always have to say, I always have to preface anything that I say with, I am ultimately only an expert in my own cats. And even that is really barely an expertise. But that having been said, it is always surprising to me how surprising it is to people who aren't cat people, how very differentiated cats' personalities are. And having lived with both cats and dogs, I would say I have seen more variety in cats' personalities than in dogs, which is not to be dismissive of dogs or say that I've not seen variety in personality. But, you know, one thing I really do try to show in this book, there are five cat characters, three central characters and two kind of friends from the neighborhood. And each one of them has a very different personality, a very different worldview, a very different conception of their relationships with each other, with humans. Again, I think that is something, and maybe this is also for people who live with cats, to not get frustrated when cats don't conform behaviorally to how you think they should be acting. It really is not only easier, it's actually better to kind of let the cat lead you a little bit in that sense and pay attention to what they are telling you about themselves. Again, I don't mean like literally talking in words, but just like with people, cats will eventually show you who they are if you give them the space in which to do so.
Very true. And I agree with you on the personalities. I had always had dogs, and then Dennis adopted me, and then more came. So once I had five, two were more community, but we took care of them, but they were still outdoor. So three indoor, two outdoor, and each one very distinct personalities. So you have to pay attention and learn who they are. But yes, very distinct. So I kind of agree with that. Do you think readers might be more influenced to adopt a cat, especially more than one cat, after reading your book?
You know, when I first sat down to write Homer's Odyssey, and it was my second book, and the literary agent I had who had sold my first book was incredibly discouraging about the idea of writing Homer's Odyssey. And I went on a little bit of a journey with that. I talked to some people and found other people who had blind cats. I just wanted to get a sense, you know, is he right? Is this a terrible idea for a book? Is this a terrible story that nobody's going to want to hear? And, you know, we sort of all came to the conclusion that if a book like Homer's Odyssey could persuade even one person to adopt one, if one blind cat ended up with a home who otherwise would not have had one, then it was worth at least trying to write this book and get it published. You know, I never know. Ultimately, I don't think anybody really knows what ultimately moves somebody to make a decision like that. But I do always hope in my writing, and especially when I write about, now that Homer is almost like a character, but when I write about a special needs cat, and certainly when I write about rescue cats, I always in the back of my mind want to show what I think an incredibly enriching and rewarding experience it can be, even if it's not to adopt a special needs cat specifically, but just to get out of the one rigid idea box you have of what a certain kind of relationship has to look like. And so I guess I always have it in my head, the hope that somebody might be persuaded in that direction. I don't know whether that happens. And when it does, I think it ultimately is a culmination effect. A lot of other things obviously go into making a decision like this. So, you know, maybe it's just like a little push.
A little push is good, and especially about adopting a special needs cat. And I think also adopting and keeping a misunderstood cat. That's a
step. That I agree with too. Yes.
I don't think any of your characters really fit that. One of mine cats fit that role. But she was feral, adopted at 4 months, and Charlotte, 9 years, still doesn't know what a litter box is. But that's not what this is about. But she's misunderstood. So if we were to, I don't think you return, you know, you adopt, she adopted me. But I think that I'm earning karma points someplace, but we, you know, she's just has issues. And while she's not disabled, except in her mind a little bit.
This is her way of communicating.
Right.
I wrote a book, and it's an essay collection. It's called My Life in a Cat House. And one of the essays in that is called The Picasso of Pee. And that story is about my cat Vashti, who in real life, not in the book, but in real life, used her own urine as a very expressive method of communication over the years. And so I do feel you on this one. I do not know what your Vashti had. She had very specific insecurities and concerns, and she liked to send a message, let's say. So I do appreciate that too. And that's part of why I say that cats all have very different personalities, and they do, if you want to be a cat person, they do force you to pay attention. But I think that's a good thing. I actually think that's why so many writers gravitate toward cats, because to be a good writer, you also have to pay attention to, you have to pay attention to others and get a sense of why they're doing what they're doing in order to create believable characters. And living with cats, I think, forces you to do that, to pay close attention, certainly to try to figure out what your cat, you know, why your cats are doing what they're doing.
Right. And I'm still trying to figure her out. I like that, though, because of P. I'm going to keep that in mind, because I'm big art fan, too. So can you give us a little hint about what your next book is going to be? It's what, The Cat Wore Black?
It is called The Cat Wore Black. It will be Homer Whodunit number 2. It is going to take place, or it's going to be set among the high-stakes world of high-fashion modeling in this small coastal town that resembles South Beach. And I'm still working through it. It's going to be a lot of fun. I know that sounds really lame, but I have just actually yesterday finished my preliminary sketching out, just where one of the first steps that I take, it's not an outline, but I just kind of sit down. And in 3,000 words, I write the whole plot of the book beginning to end. And I just finished doing that yesterday. I'm so excited about this one. And I'm so looking forward to writing these characters, to bringing back the original cats. I'm also introducing an amazing new feline character. I'm just so in love with her already. And I really think readers are going to like her too. So there will be 6 cats in this book, in addition to all the other characters. So the feline cast is growing. But they are all very different from each other. And this new addition, her name is Celia. And Celia is amazing. Celia is the best. I'm really excited to write her.
Well, I'm excited to read your book. I can't wait for it to be published. But I have a question. Well, you have our listening audience. Tell them, why should they buy your book?
Oh, you know, I really do think if you are the right person for this book, if you like cozy mysteries, if you like cozy mysteries with cats, I think it's a lot of fun. I just think it's a really fun escapist read that is in no way stupid or insulting to the intelligence of the readers. I actually think it's smart. I really did work hard on the actual mystery. So far, readers, not just my existing readers, but actually, you know, I've put this up for review on some, you know, mystery book review websites and have been getting really good feedback. So it's a good mystery. And if the idea of spending like a couple of weeks on Miami Beach in 1998 with some amazing cats hits you on all the right levels, you will definitely enjoy this book. If you are looking for just an escape from all the depressing news, you will really like this book. If you like feline hijinks, I think you'll really like this book. And I'm not usually this good a cheerleader for my own books, to tell you the truth.
You should be a cheerleader. It's a really good book. And also, just to interject, I would not know this is your first cozy mystery because it's not blatant. So there's twists.
Thank you.
Which make it even more interesting.
Yeah, I always like twists. You know, that's the fun of it, right? But I do, you know, try to lay the groundwork. Like this is the thing. I think you also have to be careful. I'm not a writer. I'm not trying to be smarter than my readers. I assume my readers are as smart as I am. So I like to get them there before the characters get there, but not as quickly as they think they've gotten there. You know, so it's a fun reveal.
Very good reveal. Anyway. Where can people find out more about you and your book?
So the best place is I have actually my own shop online where I sell directly to my readers, and I donate 10% of everything that I earn there to organizations that rescue abused, abandoned, and disabled animals. And they can find that at shop www.gwencooper.com. Having said that, you can certainly, the book is available everywhere books are sold. If your bookstore does not have it in, they can order it for you. You can buy it on Amazon. You can get the ebook on, you know, Apple, et cetera, et cetera. It is available. The ebook is available for checkout through libraries. Again, your library may or may not have a physical copy, but they should be able to get you an ebook copy. So basically, you can find it anywhere. But again, I do sell it for less in my store than it is sold other places. And you, in purchasing it directly from me, are also supporting rescue organizations. Right now, I'm making most of my donations to Kabul Small Animal Rescue in Kabul, Afghanistan, which is run by an American woman who is its founder named Charlotte Maxwell Jones, who was just doing unbelievable rescue work under unimaginable circumstances.
Oh, I applaud you for doing that, for giving back. That's wonderful. So thank you so much for that. Listeners, shop.gwencooper.com. And Gwen, I want to thank you so much for coming on Catitude.
Thank you so much for having me. It's been really fun.
Cat lovers, I hope you enjoyed this show. What a great book. Please be sure to check out You Only Live 9 Times and, hey, also Homer's Odyssey, both written by New York Times bestselling author Gwen Cooper. You can buy her books at shop.gwencooper.com and also, I'm sure, wherever books are sold. Again, thank you, Gwen, for coming on Catitude. I want to thank everyone that listens to Catitude. I appreciate you so much. Over the years, this has been an amazing ride that is hopefully going to continue for many more years. Thanks to my cat crew, Dennis, Charlotte, and Molly, who talk amongst themselves all the time. I know it. And of course, a huge thank you to my producer, Mark Winter, for doing all you do and making our shows on Pet Life Radio sound amazing. And hey, remember, lose the attitude, have catitude.
Let's Talk Pets every week on demand, only on PetLifeRadio.com.